via remote. I'm Kevin. Our lead story this hour is depressingly familiar, the coronavirus pandemic. More than 2.8 million COVID-19 infections are now reported from around the world. With Johns Hopkins University figures tied to just-released New York numbers, the mounting death toll is above 200,000. Cases here in the United States, 907,000, with 52,000 lives lost, the most anywhere. The numbers notwithstanding, some American states, notably Georgia, South Carolina, and Oklahoma, have begun a partial reopening of their economies. The state of Alaska says restaurants, retail, and other businesses will be permitted to open their doors with limits in place. In Michigan, Governor Gretchen Whitmer is allowing some outdoor recreational activities to resume, but she has extended her stay-at-home order through the middle of May. Massachusetts is holding firmly to its lockdown. The state has become a COVID-19 hotspot, with cases climbing toward 51,000, the third highest in the country, at a cost of more than 2,500 lives. New York has put its latest daily loss of lives at 437, one of the lowest totals since early March, but the virus misery in New York has been devastating. More than 271,000 cases, and with today's numbers, about 22,000 lives lost. Elsewhere in the world, India has announced a relaxation of a shutdown which affects 1.3 billion people. India has had 24,000 virus infections with 780 reported deaths. Neighborhood shops are being reopened, but the easing of movement does not apply to hundreds of quarantined Indian towns and other areas hardest hit by the outbreak. Britain is staying with its extended lockdown as the COVID-19 hospital death toll in the UK fast approaches the 20,000 mark. Nursing home deaths are a special problem. France says it will end its nationwide lockdown on May 11th, just shy of 2 months after it began. Parents can choose whether or not to send their children back to school. Via remote, this is VOA News. It is widely seen as one of the worst days of his presidency. Point of reference, Donald Trump's effort yesterday to walk back his suggestion that the fight against the coronavirus should perhaps include the use of a disinfectant in the body. He told reporters he was simply being sarcastic with them. But on camera, Mr. Trump directly asked his virus task force coordinator, Dr. Deborah Birx, if the use of disinfectant or ultraviolet light as COVID-19 therapeutics should be investigated. She responded she had never heard of that. Among the reactions prompted by Mr. Trump's words, warnings from the Surgeon General and health officials across the country, warning that the misuse of disinfectants could prove fatal. Nobel Prize-winning physicist Stephen Chu said, quote, "This is not science, it is something else." The president ended the news briefing yesterday after just 22 minutes without taking questions. Critics call the incident an example of the president's disdain for science. But White House spokesman Judd Deere fired back, arguing any suggestion that the president does not value scientific data or the important work of scientists is patently false. For the 10th straight day, China, where the pandemic began, is reporting no deaths and only 12 new cases, 11 of them from outside the country. And South Korea continues its run of days when new cases have been under 20. The latest count is 10. Large-scale testing is credited with helping South Korea hold down its cases. It has had only 240 virus deaths. Adequate testing remains an issue in many parts of the United States. About 4.7 million COVID-19 tests have been administered so far in a nation of 330 million people. Researchers at Harvard University say a 500,000 tests a day or more are needed before the American economy can be safely reopened. The U.S. Navy is recommending the reinstatement of the aircraft carrier captain fired for sending an email pleading for faster action to protect his crew from the coronavirus. The Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Mike Gilday, says Captain Brent Crozier should be given back the command of his aircraft carrier, USS Theodore Roosevelt. The decision now is up to U.S. Defense Secretary Mark Esper. Captain Crozier is hospitalized for COVID-19, as are hundreds of his former crew members. President Trump has signed into law a $484 billion bill to aid employers and hospitals under stress from the coronavirus pandemic. It is the latest effort by the federal government to save small and medium-sized businesses that have had to close or dramatically alter their operations as states try to slow the spread of the virus. Over the past 5 weeks, roughly 26 million workers in the U.S. have filed for jobless aid, or about 1 in 6 U.S. workers. Mr. Trump called the passage of the aid measure by Congress and his signing it a tremendous victory. More news online at voanews.com. By remote, I'm Gene Randall, and this is VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotte in Washington, D.C.
Is this too much to ask the president of 200 million people who are citizens, doctors who are his age mates in private hospital and public hospital, are risking their lives, over 60 are risking their life to serve and save Nigerians?
An activist comes under criticisms for saying Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari is leading from the back in the fight to halt the spread of the coronavirus.
The Ghanaian economy is 90% reliant on the informal sector, and the informal sector is being ruled or being carried by women. And these women are going through serious issues that affect them psychologically, emotionally.
A Ghanaian gender activist calls for an inquiry into the economic impact of COVID-19 on women and children.
There's no way we can create a publicity stunt out of a serious arrest from one district to another in the midst of COVID and being tortured and being put in prison for 7 days. First time in my life in a police holding cell and in prison.
And a major Botswana opposition party condemns the arrest of its spokesperson. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The convener of Concerned Nigerians, a pro-democracy group, is coming under criticism for saying President Muhammadu Buhari is leading from behind in the fight against the coronavirus. Deji Adeyanju said the president seems to have disappeared from public view as the country confronts the pandemic. But supporters of the ruling party rejected the criticism, saying the accusation is regrettable. This after stating that the president has established a team of medical experts and other stakeholders to address the crisis. Deji Adeyanju tells me that the president must step down if he is unable to lead out of the crisis.
Basically, we want a situation where the president will lead the fight against the fight of this pandemic, because he's the commander-in-chief and is the president of the Federal Republic of Nigeria. All box tops at his table. The president need to give Nigeria up-to-date steps on what government is doing to curtail the spread of the disease of the pandemic, of the virus. And again, the president, you know, has to be proactive. The president cannot be hiding while governors like Lagos, Rivers, Oyo, Enugu and several others are leading from the front. It has gotten so bad to the point that governors now met and agreed yesterday through teleconferencing, you know, to extend the lockdown and now make it a national thing. And under our constitution, we run a constitutional democracy. The governors don't have the power to do that. But because the president is sleeping on duty, the governors have to act.
This is the situation where health experts have been put in charge of the fight against COVID-19, including prominent Nigerian medical doctors who are advising the government in the way to stop the spread. The president has given them all the powers, the backing they need to do that. Isn't that enough?
Yes, you are right to say that the president is liaising with the NCDC in the fight against this pandemic. But I believe that the president is aware that people are beginning to die in Kano to a mysterious disease. Since the president has had, the president has not said anything. The president is not, you know, leading from the front. What? The president can wear PPP, pay a visit to one of the isolation center. The governors are doing it. The governors are not even wearing PPP. The governors are coming to address people on a daily basis, give update. President Trump is doing it. Putin is doing it. The British Prime Minister, even when he was sick on the hospital bed, was addressing the nation. Is this too much to ask the president of 200 million people who are citizens, doctors who are his age mates in private hospital and public hospital, are risking their lives, over 60 are risking their life to serve and save Nigerians?
What is your response to his supporters who are saying your accusations and criticisms are unfair and regrettable, knowing that the man is over 70 years old and that the COVID-19 attacks people
or older people, and that your criticism is just saying that he should sign his own death warrant with the disease.
You know, those who are saying that are implying that the country should be grounded because Buhari is over 70. And the president of Ghana is over 70, is within Buhari's age. And he's so proactive. He's leading the fight against this pandemic from the front. So should it be because the president is over 70, therefore the country should suffer for it? Should it be because the president is over... And what law says that he must be president? If the president is afraid and he feels he can no longer come out to lead the country from the front, he should do the voluntary thing and resign. None of us want anything bad to happen to him. So if the president cannot lead the country, if the president cannot provide leadership for the country, why then must he continue to hold on to power? This is the same mentality of Africans perpetually being in love with their oppressors. And it is this African mentality that I must be in power by all costs that make nations go to ruin.
Some of his supporters are saying your call for him to resign is a strong indication that you don't want him to be the president in any way, but that he was legitimately elected by the people of Nigeria to lead, and he has empowered institutions to fight the spread, and he is giving them the mandate, as well as the recent meeting with other heads of state in the West African region, to come up with a common understanding to fight the spread of the disease. And that is a demonstration that the president is leading by example. How do you respond to that?
See, basically, it's a very simple issue. Nigerians elected Buhari. Nigerians did not elect the NCDC boss. If there's a pandemic in Kano, it is a natural thing, and people are panicking. There are so many reports here and there. It's a natural thing. We see President Trump doing it. We see Nana Akufo-Addo doing it. We see everybody is doing it. We see state governors here doing it. Governor Sanwo-Olu is a typical example. Wike as well. Sheyi Makinde as well. People are leading from the front in the states. Can't you see what happened yesterday? It's a direct aberration and an assault on our constitutional democracy, a situation where governors, because the president has failed, governors will now come and invoke powers that they do not have and say they are locking down the entire country. Only the president has the constitutional powers under our laws to do what happened, that decision that was taken yesterday. But because the president has abdicated his responsibility, therefore the governors must rise to the occasion.
Deji Adeyanju is the convener of Concerned Nigerians, a pro-democracy pressure group. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. In Ghana, the executive director for the Gender Center for Empowering Development is calling on the government to launch an investigation to determine the gender impact of the coronavirus. Esther Tewia says the inquiry will help policymakers with the much-needed information in order to come up with comprehensive plans to tackle the issue. This, as women have borne the brunt of the pandemic. Her remark comes as countries impose restrictions to halt the spread of the disease. Ms. Tewia tells me that her organization has come up with measures which she says could help resolve some of the economic challenges the restrictions have on women.
So yes, it's true. We're calling on our government to look at the gender impact, because statistics that has come out is showing that there is high rate of gender-based violence during this pandemic because of the lockdown. And so that shows that couples who are stuck with their abusive partners don't have anywhere to go. And so we are calling on our government to do the gender audit, where these issues is going to come up and then they can design strategies and all that to address it. For example, this is the time for us to enforce and make sure that our governments do certain things. For example, in Ghana, we have a Domestic Violence Act. The act gives the government's opportunity to put a fund down to support the victim. Unfortunately, it's not operational, it's not working. And so it's difficult for victims to access support. And also, it's affecting their life and health care.
How soon do you expect the government to launch an inquiry on an audit about this concern that you're expressing?
Now, it's an urgent matter. We don't have time. As they are busy talking about the economy and the numbers and what they are losing on a daily basis, I think it's important that they speak about it now. We need to do that now. We don't have time on our hand. And again, as they are making the packages, you know, now there's, because for me, the reason why I'm saying now is that they are making economic packages and all that, but they are forgetting that they need to focus on this issue and help address it to mitigate the consequences that will come onto the society. You understand? And now that there is a fund, IMF and all those people are supporting, it's time for us to make our government do it now.
Well, Esther, some Ghanaians are arguing that there are more pressing issues for the government to resolve, including the negative impact of the disease on the economy and people out of jobs, and that it will be prudent for the government to tackle those first before addressing your issues. What do you say to that?
Those Ghanaians speaking like that obviously are speaking out of ignorance. If you heard our president's statement, in one of his address to the nation, he said that they have what it takes to bring the economy back, but they don't have what it takes to bring somebody back from death, you know, to life. And this tells me that life is more important than whatever economy issue that they are discussing. The Ghanaian economy is 90% reliant on the informal sector, and the informal sector is being ruled or being carried by women. And these women are going through serious issues that affect them psychologically, emotionally. And some of the women, even in the formal sector, are going through this. We know our working environment and all that. And so those who are saying that do not understand the issues and they don't appreciate the issues. But the truth of the matter is that this is the backbone of a growing economy. You need healthy people to grow your economy for you, not people who are not healthy.
What would be the next line of action of your group if your call is not immediately addressed by the government?
As a civil society organization, we are more into advocacy. You know, we believe that continuous advocacy of the issue would bring solution to us. So we will continue advocating for it and try to work with the media and all that to bring more light to the conversation. And also the sector ministry. You know, we have the Gender, Children and Social Protection Ministry. So we'll continue to engage them on ways that we could all help to address this challenge.
Esther Tewia is the executive director for the Gender Center for Empowering Development. She spoke with me from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. Meanwhile, Albert Arthur is a Ghanaian inventor based in Takwa in the Ghanaian Western Region. He has invented a manually operated hand washing machine that he says could help the fight against the coronavirus. The machine, which has been trending on social media platforms, has attracted the attention of the health authorities. This, as officials confirm 1,154 cases of the disease, with 9 deaths and 99 recovered. Mr. Arthur says to wash their hands, the individual will use the leg to operate the tap, which discharges both the soap and the water without touching anything. The same can be done by discharging the paper towel to dry hands, all without touching the equipment and thereby reducing the possibility of infection. To learn more about the hand washing equipment, I reached Kingsley Edmund Beidou, spokesperson and younger brother of inventor Albert Arthur.
Actually, we are in the western region of Ghana, Takwa precisely. My brother invented a hand washing machine that instead of using your hand to open the tap, contrary to the Veronica bucket that is trending, with this one you have to use your legs to operate, and it will give you soap, water, sanitizer, and there is another portion that will also give you solar lightning when there is darkness, and the paper towel as well.
How has been the response in Takwa and across the western region and other parts of the country since his invention was made public?
Actually, the response has been very marvelous, very encouraging. But for now, we're still working on the modifications. Just about 3 days ago, we just formed a board, an advisory board made up of experts from the University of Mines and Technology in Takwa. We have an expert in hydrogeology. We have another expert in mechanical. We have engineers who went to look at the prototype. They made one or two suggestions. So we're still working on it. And I think by a week time, it will be fully done, and the whole world will get to know about this particular marvelous invention.
Once it is complete, what are your expectations of this new invention, and how will that help in the fight to curb the spread of the coronavirus in Ghana?
Peter, first of all, let me say, I didn't even greet the people of Chakwa and the president of Ghana and the whole of Ghana. Actually, the name of our company is Short Body Engineering and Mining Services, of which my brother Albert Atta, aka Short Body, is the managing director. You know, we see this COVID-19 as the third world war. That is why we invented this machine. If you look at the inventions that has been trending, comparatively, I think ours has a competitive advantage because most of all are somehow electronic, and when the system goes down, everything is shut down. But ours is purely manual, and we think this invention will go a long way because we don't want the protocols of COVID-19 to be a 9-day wonder. It should be part of the attitude of humanity, washing your hands every day at schools, public toilets, clinics, hospitals, etc. So for us, we think this particular invention, if endorsed by the whole world, of which we think it's positive, will help us all to be healthy.
Have you reached out to the authorities who can help in using this invention of your brother to these institutions that could help curb the spread of the virus?
I don't know if you've watched the videos trending. After completing the first prototype, we called upon the municipal chief executive of Takwa in Swahim, Honorable Gilbert K.D. Asuma, to come and experiment. I mean, his picture, his video is the one even trending more. He assured us that he's going to make sure it gets to the authorities. But as far as I'm concerned, we are also planning of launching this machine. We've made more contacts and they've given us a very positive response. We're still working on the modifications, after which we will talk to the Ghana Standard Authority, then to reach the right authorities, then we'll see how best this machine will fare. But as I said, it's been trending, and I think so far the news we're getting is very positive.
Kingsley Edmund Beidou is the spokesperson and younger brother of Ghanaian inventor Albert Atta. He spoke with me from Takwa. The owner and CEO of Madam Woki Fashion has launched an initiative seeking to provide 60,000 face masks to traders in Sierra Leone. Mary Ann Kaikai says she is working with other groups, including health authorities, to halt the spread of the coronavirus in the West African country. Her efforts have reached Chelsea soccer star Antonio Rudiger, who supported the initiative with $5,000. Rudiger, who was born in Germany to Sierra Leonean parent, is helping to raise additional funds to help efforts to curb the spread of the disease. He thanked his fellow soccer stars Mesut Ozil, N'Golo Kante, Callum Hudson-Odoi, and Oliver Giroud for their support to the initiative. Mariana Nkaikai, CEO of the Madam Woki Fashion, tells me that she plans to raise about $30,000 to expand the efforts to provide masks to prevent the spread of the virus.
Our target is to provide 60,000 masks for market traders in Sierra Leone. We realize that, you know, a lot of people go to the market you know, to source food products, and the market traders, you know, one of the most vulnerable groups that are not protected, and who a lot of people in Freetown tend to engage with. So the focus was to make sure that they're protected, that the kids that help them to sell as well are protected. So yeah, that was why we decided to launch the campaign.
Talk to me about the mask. Will they be reusable?
So yes, the mask that we are producing, reusable mask, the fabrics that we're using to make the mask are what we normally call the Ankara wax print that is found all over West Africa. Those are the fabrics that we're going to be using to produce the mask. And the tailors that are going to be working on the mask, we're not just using our local tailors from Mademoki. We're also outsourcing production of the mask to other tailors and seamstresses across the country that have been financially affected by COVID-19. At the moment, we have about 80 tailors and seamstresses that we've outsourced from different parts of the country who've been financially affected by COVID-19 who need the job. So those are the ones that we're going to be using to produce the mask. So, I mean, it's, of course, it's a job creation, but it's also a way to also help them at this difficult time.
Are you going to be working with the health authorities to ensure that the mask meets international standards that will help curb the spread of the coronavirus in Sierra Leone?
Yes, we're working in close partnership with the Ministry of Health to make sure that you know, the masks are produced to meet the international standard, and then also even the people producing the masks, making sure that the masks are produced in a clean and safe environment. So we're working directly with the health officials who normally go, who are going to be going from time to time to do a periodic check to make sure the people who are even producing the masks are wearing gloves, you know, medical gloves, and they're also wearing masks to protect themselves while producing the mask. So yes, we're going to have health inspectors from the Ministry of Health working alongside us.
How are you being funded with this initiative, following reports that you are teaming up with the Chelsea defender Rudiger to help with the efforts of your initiative to make these masks for the underprivileged in Freetown and beyond?
The EU in Sierra Leone is funding $15,000, and so we're doing an online fundraising matching campaign. And Rudiger, who holds some Sierra Leone from Kono, has made a pledge of $5,000 to match that campaign. For any amount that is raised, the EU is going to match that amount. To make sure that we're able to produce masks for market women across the country. So apart from the mask that we're producing, we're also doing a video campaign that is going to be played locally in all the radio and TV stations that advises and also encourages people to wear the mask and to use the mask.
Marianne Kaikai is the CEO of the Mademoki Fashion. She spoke with me from the Sierra Leonean capital, Freetown.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Malaria is transmitted by mosquito bites, but there are some things you can do to reduce your risk. Wear light-colored, loose-fitting clothing, including long pants and long sleeves, especially when it is dark and mosquitoes are most active. Eliminate any standing water around your home, including water that collects in wood piles, taps, puddles, old buckets, water jugs, and containers that livestock drink from. And if you can get one, use an insecticide-treated bed net to cover you and your children while you sleep.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
And you are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the opposition Botswana Patriotic Front, or BPF, says its lawyers are planning to petition the High Court about the arrest and alleged torture of its spokesperson, Justin Motlambane. The party accuses the government of using the state of emergency to clamp down on those deemed to be opponents of President Mokgweetsi Masisi's government. Citing the arrest of its spokesperson, the party said the government is using state institutions to harass the opposition and silence dissent. Justin Motlambane, spokesperson for the Botswana Patriotic Front, BPF, tells me that the security operatives who arrested him did not show any warrant, and he says that his detention could have exposed him to the disease because social distancing is not being enforced in the police cells.
Yes, it is true. I was recently arrested at my house in Palape in central Botswana. There were no reasons given for the arrest. Between 20 and 25 police officers came. They were very aggressive. They were banging windows and doors. They pulled me out of the house as I was about to unlock it, screaming and kicking. They teared off my clothes and they put shackles on me. When the neighbors came, then they were realizing that I was undressed. They then put me back in the house to get something to wear. And they took my laptops and phones and dragged me to a police holding cells where I was kept overnight. The following morning, I was picked up by officers from Serious Crime Squad headquarters in Gaborone, who then drove with me for 3 hours to the capital city where I was kept.
Why were you arrested? Did they give you any information leading to your arrest, and did they present any arrest warrant to you before your arrest?
There was no warrant presented for search, for seizure, or for arrest. They just came and took me. They didn't say anything. They just wanted my gadgets. And they searched the house and they searched my car. And they kept me in the city at the serious crime headquarters where I was being interrogated and tortured. They conducted interviews for hours where I was completely naked in front of men and women. And they were asking me questions about a possible coup in Botswana and party activities and plans and strategies and my conversations with the president of the Botswana Patriotic Front, Butale, and some personal things about the former president of Botswana, Seretse Khama, Ian Khama.
Have you or those you know, including the former president, been involved in activities to subvert the constitution or undermine the stability of Botswana?
Absolutely no. We have never been involved in that. We've been active political actors canvassing for votes in a democratic setup. This is how our party has been campaigning. These things that they're bringing up seems to be state-sponsored conspiracies to go after the opposition under what they call a state of emergency, which they have declared, which gives absolute power to the president of the ruling party. If there is anything like that, I'm not party to it. I've not been informed. I've just been sharing information with the media, with everyone that concerns our party plans and activities. I know nothing, absolutely nothing about a coup, and I would not be involved in something like that. That is not democratic and that is not within the constitution. So they had to take me through torture and through hell, and I was put in prison where I was released yesterday on some new charges that they say have to do with social media.
How long were you held in the police cells and under what conditions did they release you?
I was held in several police cells in Botswana. The first cell they took me to under the COVID-19 conditions was in Palape Police Holding Cell, where they kept me for a day with about nine other people who said they were from Zimbabwe. The following morning, they took me to serious crime offices where several officers were interviewing me, where the torture took place. And then after that, they threw me into Gaborone West Police Cell, where I was kept for 3 days. From there, they took me to the magistrate court, which directed that I be taken to prison, maximum security prison. They then decided that they were not going to do that and took me to another cell at Urban Police Station, where they could come and pick us overnight with the other two guys that have been accused. From there, they took us to Lobatse Prison, and we then applied to Lobatse High Court for bail.
Justice, what does your party intend to do about this? Because some people are suggesting that this is just a publicity stunt just to attract attention to your party.
There are several options that the party is considering. And just to clarify, there's no way we can create a publicity stunt out of a serious arrest from one district to another in the midst of COVID and being tortured and being put in prison for 7 days, first time in my life in a police holding cell and in prison. And you go online and check Botswana newspapers and social media, you'll see that people are talking about this. People in Botswana have now stopped commenting on social media. There is a calm. People are in fear because of the state of emergency. But once the National Executive Committee has considered the options, we would go ahead and announce them. But the legal team is ready, and this action that we're going to be taking, this is not a joke. This can be a publicity stunt. There's ample evidence that I've been arrested, and I left prison yesterday.
Justin Motlebane is the spokesperson for the Botswana Patriotic Front, an opposition party. He spoke with me from the capital, Gaborone. In a bid to decongest city centers and towns to curb the spread of COVID-19, the Zimbabwean government has ordered informal traders to vacate central business districts. For VOA, Adegondo gives us more on the story from Bulawayo.
Since Zimbabwe went on a partial lockdown to fight the COVID-19 coronavirus, city and town centers have been empty of the usual crowds of informal vendors selling wares to make a living. The vendors have already publicly voiced concerns over hunger and poverty during the lockdown. But this week, authorities said that even after national lockdown restrictions for the coronavirus are relaxed, informal traders will not be allowed back to central business districts. In Zimbabwe's second city, Bulawayo, council officials issued a statement advising vendors and informal traders to move to the high-density townships. Bulawayo Mayor Solomon Nguni confirmed the advisory to traders, but insisted consultations with stakeholders are still in progress.
Not yet official. Those are communications to vendors of an intention that is supposed to be done after the lockdown. It is yet to be adopted by council. So they were being advised of what council intends to do, but it has not yet come to adoption by council.
But Mike Ondiweni of the 5,000-member Bulawayo Vendors Association said the planning process for relocation has not included them so far.
Yeah, because the concern is that what we saw as guidelines for formal trading during lockdown and post-lockdown is that there is no mention of associations as key players in the process of allocating in the committee that is in charge of managing the process of trading in this new setup, whereas there are various government ministries and also local authorities, but there are no associations mentioned. We want it to be formalized in terms of the role of association. There is a likelihood, of course, that it could politicize if the role of traders is not clearly defined in the new operational framework.
In the capital, Minister of State for Harare Province, Oliver Shdao, and Harare Mayor Herbert Gumba said informal traders will also have to set up shop in new vending sites after the lockdown. In a joint statement, they said the allocation of sites will be overseen by the Provincial Joint Operations Command, which comprises high-ranking officials from the Army, Police, Intelligence Services, and the City of Harare. They say that it is intended to ensure clean and orderly cities and optimize revenue collection. But observers say shifting vending sites away from central business districts will prove challenging in terms of implementation and compliance because citizens are already hard-pressed to eking out a living. Zimbabwe's annual inflation stands at over 670% according to Zimstats, and 90% of the working population is in the informal sector. Brian Moyer, a public policy analyst, says decongestion is not a bad idea in principle, but should involve consultation with those directly affected. Critics have said allocation of vending sites has been problematic in the past due to political manipulation and interference in the process. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
Police in Malawi have clashed with prison guards who are demanding personal protective equipment or PPE against the coronavirus as well as hazard pay. The guards went on strike Thursday saying working without the PPEs in the crowded prisons is putting them at risk of infection. For VOA, Lamek Masina reports from the Malawian commercial capital, Blantyre.
Police in Malawi Friday used tear gas to disperse protesting prison guards in various jails across the country. The guards resisted the action by throwing stones and pointing guns at the police armory vehicles, forcing them to withdraw. The clashes began Thursday after the guards at Chichiri Prison in Blantyre allegedly assaulted three police officers who wanted to stop the strike. National Prison spokesperson Chimwemwe Shawa told VOA he can't comment on police's action in Friday's events.
Currently, I am trying to touch base because I've seen them in the social media. But for now, I don't have any comment on the involvement of the police. But management are trying to make sure that the tension is eased.
The striking guards say they believe the riot police stormed prisons in apparent retaliation for the assault on the officers. National Police spokesperson James Kadadzera denied this, saying police are treating the assault on its officers as a separate incident. Kadadzera told VOA that the police are trying to talk sense into the prison guards on the grounds that it's unlawful for a government security organ to stage a strike. The junior prison guards want authorities to provide them with the personal protective equipment against the coronavirus, as well as hazard pay and promotion. They say many guards have worked for more than 20 years without promotion and that working without the PPEs would put their lives at risk of contracting the virus, especially from new inmates. Authorities have recorded 33 cases of COVID-19 in Malawi, along with three deaths. A prison guard at the Zomba Maximum Security Prison who did not want to be identified for fear of reprisals told VOA in a telephone interview that the guards have resolved to shut down the prison's kitchen on Saturday. She said, "We are very angry now, and if they are not doing anything, I am telling you the prisoners will die of hunger. We have so many sick people in prisons, some on ARVs, who can't live without food." National Prison spokesperson Shawa said the guards' demands are justifiable, but the problem is the protesters refuse to discuss the matter with the prison management.
The junior officers, Stumo, believe that only the city can bring answers to their concerns. So basically, management will be meeting as well, monitoring the situation, as well trying to come up with measures to manage the tension.
Nurses in Malawi's public hospitals are also holding sit-ins, demanding PPEs and an increase in hazard pay. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Senti
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, Managing Editor Shaka Sali, Reporter Douglas Impuga, and Producer Saida Hamdoun, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, he who likes to eat pepper soup and not wash his hands must have hands that do not know the way to his eyes. I'm your host, Peter Clothe, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.